Dear brothers and sisters, when you hear the bell, practice breathing in and out. You may like to call the name of that one person while you breathe in. And then when you breathe out, you say, "Here I am." That person may be Buddha. That person may be Jesus. That person may be your father, a person that you love, that you need. And when you call that the name of that person will be present in your heart. And when you breathe out, you say, "Here I am." And then you make yourself present also. I remember one day I look at the moon, full moon, very bright, very beautiful. In the upper arm that breathing in, I say, "Beautiful moon." And breathing out, I say, "Here I am." And I also practice like that with the magnolia flowers, the cherry blossoms, the blue sky. It's very nourishing. My dear friends, mindfulness is the kind of energy that can help us to be there in the present moment. You might practice mindful breathing, or mindful walking, or mindful listening, or mindful looking. Any kind of practice of mindfulness will bring you there, to the present moment, to the here and the now, where peace, love, stability, joy is possible. If you love someone, you have to be there in order for your love to be real, to be true. How can we love if we were not there? To love means to produce our true presence and make it into a gift for the person we love. And it is not difficult to be there. You only need to breathe in mindfully, to breathe out mindfully a few times, and you are there for the person you love. The greatest gift you can make to your beloved one is your true presence. There is a young man, a boy of 12 years old. One day his father asked him what kind of gift he would like to have on his birthday, the next day. The boy did not know how to answer because he really did not need anything, did not want anything. There is one thing he wants, but it seems that it's too difficult. That is the presence of his father. His father is very rich. He can afford to buy anything for his son. But he hardly can offer him his true presence. He's too busy. He ran after wealth, fame, and other things like that. And has hardly time and presence for his son, his wife. So if he knows that the greatest gift he can make to his son on his birthday, and then he would arrange so that he can stay home and offer his true presence to his son. You can practice a little bit of that breathing in and out, and come and sit down close to his son and make a declaration, "Darling, I'm really there for you. And this is a mantra you can pronounce as a gift to the person you love." If you are aware that the greatest gift you can make to the person you love is your true presence, and then why don't give him, give her just that? You don't need to buy that true presence. You don't need money. You just go back to the present moment, make yourself real and true, and offer that to the person you love. If you are too busy, how could you love? And many of us are too busy today in order to be able to really love. Mindfulness is the crucial practice for those who claim to be a true lover, because we know that mindfulness can help us to be really there and truly there for the beloved one. And we know that we can do that. Every one of us is able to do that. Mindfulness is the kind of energy that helps us to be really there. And when you are there, you will recognize the presence of what is there, who is there. That is also the work of mindfulness. When I look up at the full moon and breathe in and say, "Beautiful moon." And when I breathe out and say, "Here I am," I make the full moon present, and I make myself present. I practice breathing in and I say, "Full moon." And when I breathe out, I say, "I know you are there, and I'm very happy." This spring, we were a group of 20 people visiting China, mainland China, Korea, Japan, Taiwan. When I was in Korea, I saw many beautiful magnolia blossoms. I spent time walking among the magnolia trees in flowers. So beautiful. I was very mindful of the beauty. And I breathe in, I say, "I know you are there. And I'm very happy." When you love someone, that someone is very precious to you. With mindfulness, you may recognize her presence, which is so precious to you. You can recognize his presence. With mindfulness, you can utter the second mantra, "Darling, I know you are there, and I am very happy." Because mindfulness helps us to recognize and appreciate what is there and who is there. There's so many things around us that we should recognize their presence and appreciate their presence. Not only people we love, but the blue sky, the beautiful moon, the trees, the birds. There are many things inside of us also are so precious, like our eyes, our heart, our lungs. They are so vital for us. They are the base, the foundation of our peace, our happiness, our joy. And yet we don't pay attention to them. We wait until they disappear or destroyed in order to cry and to regret. That is because we are not mindful enough, practicing mindful breathing and recognize them, recognize their presence and appreciate their presence. That is also the work of mindfulness. Darling, I know you are there and I am very happy. That is what we should practice. With what is refreshing, healing, and beautiful around us, inside us. And also the people we love and we need. When you are mindful, you will know that the person you love is in difficulty, that she suffers. If you suffer and the person you love does not know it, you suffer more. And if the person you love knows that you suffer less. And that is why during the time when you suffer, you need very much the presence of the person you love. Therefore, if you are aware that she suffers, you have to come to her right away. You might like to practice mindful breathing in order to be really there. And you sit down and you say, "Darling, I know you suffer. That is why I'm here for you." Because you already know that our presence is very crucial for the person we love. If you do not offer your true presence when the person you love suffers, you are not loving him, you are not loving her, you are not capable of loving. And this also a practice of mindfulness. A mantra is something that you utter in a state of concentration, body, mind, and speech in perfect oneness. And anything you utter at that moment is a mantra. You don't need to practice these mantras in Sanskrit or Tibetan or Chinese, or Vietnamese. You might practice them in English. If you breathe in and out deeply and become yourself concentrated, and then the statement, "Darling, I am here for you," become a real mantra, and you know that you will create a miracle. You create happiness for the person you love and yourself in that moment. And that happiness depends on the degree of your concentration. Because if you are very concentrated, the power of the mantra will be great. Therefore, we should not utter that mantra when we are not concentrated. And to be concentrated, you know, it's not too difficult. Just mindful breathing and going back to the present moment. There is another mantra, the fourth, which is a little bit more difficult to practice. That is in the case you yourself, you suffer. And you believe that your suffering has been caused by the person you love the most in this world. And this mantra is like this: darling, I suffer, please help. It's difficult because when you believe that your suffering has been caused by the person you love the most, you get hurt so deeply that the pride in you would prevent you to go to him or to her and ask for help. Many of us are caught in this kind of situation. When you get hurt by the person you love, you want to be alone. You want to show that you don't need him. You don't need her. You can be on your own. You prefer to go into your room and lock yourself in and cry silently than to show your suffering to him or her. That is not a good practice. That is not true love. True love is when you suffer, you have to go to the person you love the most in this world and ask for help. It is difficult, but we can do it with some practice. There is a story that happened in Vietnam about 400 years ago concerning a young couple. A tragedy, a real tragedy. A young man was drafted into the army, and he had to leave his young wife, already pregnant. And when he came home three years later, his wife was so happy. She took the little boy to the gate of the village and welcomed him. They hugged each other. They cried. Their tears is tears of happiness. According to our tradition, when you have that kind of happiness, you have to announce it to your ancestors. You have to prepare an offering. So the young man asked his wife to go to the market and buy some provisions, some fruit, some flowers, and prepare an offering to be placed on the altar of the ancestors. We still practice that in Vietnam. In every home, there is an ancestral altar. Anything that happened to the life of your family, you have to announce it to your ancestors. You have to go to the family altar, you light a stick of incense, you offer that to your ancestors, and you announce what has happened to your ancestors. You practice touching your ancestors every day. And that is why you don't feel lonely, cut off from the stream of life which belongs to you and to your ancestors, also to your children and grandchildren. So while the lady was away, the young father tried to persuade his little boy to call him daddy. But the little boy refused. "No, mister, you are not my daddy. My daddy used to come every night." And my mother used to talk a lot to my daddy. And very often she cried. And every time my mother sat down, my daddy will sit down also. And every time my mother lie down, he lie down also. So from the time he hear these words from the child, all his happiness just vanished. He was deeply hurt. He became something like a block of ice. When the young wife, the young lady came home, he did not look at her. Feeling so hurt, he did not talk to her. And when the offering has been placed on the altar, he burned the incense, he prayed, he practiced four prostrations, and then he rolled up the mat, did not allow his wife to do the same, the four prostrations. And his wife was humiliated. In his mind, he believed that his wife is not qualified to present herself before the ancestors. And he continued to deal with her, to treat her like that. And pride did not allow him to go and ask his wife and find out about the reality. And his wife also suffered very deeply like him. And 3 days later, she could not bear it anymore. She jumped into the river and got drowned. That night when the young father lighted the kerosene lamp, suddenly the little boy shouted, "Here is my daddy, here is my daddy," and he pointed to the shadow of his father on the wall. "You know, mister, my daddy used to come every night like this, and my mother used to talk a lot to him, she cried a lot. And every time my mother sit down, my daddy will sit down also." Now the young father began to understand, but it's too late. In fact, the young lady used to talk to her own shadow. She cried. She said, "My good husband, you have gone away for too long. How could I alone raise and teach the child? Please come back as soon as you can." And that was really what was happening. It's too late. The husband was the victim of a wrong perception. The Buddha said that all of us may be victims of our own wrong perceptions. We create suffering within ourselves, and we create hell for the other person, the person we love the most in the world. We have to be very careful of our perceptions. Very often we misunderstand the other person. Sometimes we think turning right, but we say turning left. There are accents like that. And because we are not really there, we are not very mindful, we are not able to realize what is really going on. We misunderstand, we misinterpret the event. We have wrong perception, and we create suffering for ourselves and for the other. If the young man had gone to his wife and asked, "Darling," the little boy said that a man used to come every night. Who is him? And then the lady would have had a chance to explain, and they would have saved their happiness. But he did not do so because pride had prevented him to go to her. In true love, there is no place for pride. The mistake of the young father was not going to the person he loved the most and ask for help and ask for explanation. He was hurt so deeply, and pride prevented him to do so. But the young lady, she also committed exactly the same mistake. If she had gone to him and asked him, "My husband, why have not you looked at me? You have not talked to me. Why don't you look at me? Why don't you talk to me? Why you didn't allow me to make the four prostrations before the altar? Have I done anything wrong? Please tell me." If she had done like that, he would have explain to her about his pain, his suffering, his hurt. She had not done that. I do not want my friends to be caught in the same situation. The story of that family is not a story that happened 400 years ago. It may be happening right now, a little bit everywhere. When we get hurt, we may be caught in our pride. We think, if another person said that to me, I would not suffer that much. If another person did that to me, I would not suffer that much. But here, it is the person I love the most who have said that to me, who have done that to me, and you suffer very deeply. You get hurt, and pride prevents you to go to her, to him, and ask for help. So I would like to offer you the fourth mantra. You have to practice in order to be there, really concentrated, and you go to her or to him. The mantra is short. "Darling, I suffer. Please help." If you can do that, you can avoid the tragedy. And this also is a practice of mindfulness in our daily life. Dear friends, last June, we had a conference in Plum Village called the Nuns Conference, the future of the order of nuns in the West. And we invited a number of Catholic nuns to come and share with us the meditation, the discussion, and so on. There was a Catholic nun who lived in Germany. Her name is Hannah. She's more than 80 years old. And she liked being in Plum Village very much. One day I was walking, practicing walking meditation with her and other sisters and brothers in the lower hamlet. And we halfway, we stop and sit down under the trees. It's very beautiful piece of land of wood. It was June, very beautiful. On the way to the wood, we have gone through many beauties. The grass, the trees, the insects, the butterflies, the tiny flowers of different kind of colors. And since we practice mindful walking, we encounter all these wonderful beings in the realm of animals, vegetables, and minerals. If you practice walking meditation with concentration and mindfulness, and then you may encounter a lot of wonders in you and around you. We did not say anything to each other during walking, but when we sat under the trees, looking up at the beautiful leaves and the sunshine filtering through the leaves, we also enjoyed so much that we did not feel the need to talk to each other. And then when I knew the time was for us to walk back, I turned to a brother of French origin, Brother Sariputra, a monk, and I told him this in French, Le paradis, c'est maintenant ou jamais. Paradise is now or never. He smiled at me. And Sister Hannah also smiled at me because she is German, but she knows French very well. We communicated so well. We did not have to say a lot of things. These things, the little flowers of different colors, the blue sky, the butterflies, the vegetation, the song of the birds. These are things that only exist in paradise. And paradise is available in the here and the now. You only need to touch it and to recognize its presence. Some of us may believe that paradise is far away, or nirvana is far away, the Buddha land is far away, or the kingdom of God is far away. But all of us have learned from our teachers that the kingdom of God is in your heart, that nirvana is in the here and the now. We need only to be there deeply in order to touch it. Some of us may believe that in paradise there is no suffering. In nirvana, in the kingdom of God also. To me, there is suffering in paradise. There is suffering in nirvana. There is suffering in the kingdom of God. That is one way of describing paradise or the pure land. We know that what we long the most to the most, what we desire the most in our heart, is peace and stability and freedom. We know that happiness will not be possible unless we have some peace, some stability, and some freedom. According to the Buddhist teaching, Nirvana is solidity and freedom. And if we want, we can touch Nirvana right in the here and the now. Because solidity, freedom and peace are available. And touching them means touching the kingdom of God, touching the Buddha land. I would like to invite you to look a little bit deeply about peace. If we have not experienced the opposite of peace, turmoil, agitation, doubt, could we recognize peace when it is there? I don't think so. If we have not experienced the opposite of peace, we would not recognize peace when it is there. The same thing is true with solidity and freedom. It is like if we do not know what is hunger. We have never been hungry, and then we will not be able to experience the joy of having something to eat. If we have never experienced cold, we would not feel happy when it is warm. How could happiness be there if suffering is not there? Suffering is made of happiness, and happiness of suffering. It is like a flower is made of garbage, and the garbage is made of flowers. Looking into the flower, you see that flowers are made of non-flower elements. And among these elements is the element of compost, of garbage. You cannot have a flower unless you have compost. And when you look deeply into the heap of compost, of garbage, you know that the flower is in there. With the compost, with the garbage, you may manufacture compost. And if you are an organic gardener, you would not throw the garbage away, because you know how to make it into the compost and transform it back into vegetable and flowers. Things into are. We know that a flower cannot be without the garbage, and the garbage cannot be without the flower. The same thing is true with happiness and suffering. The kingdom of God is made with the substance of the suffering world. In every piece of the kingdom of God, if we touch deeply, we can recognize the world of suffering. Like when you touch a flower deeply, you recognize the element of garbage in it. And the opposite is also true. In any piece of the suffering world, you can find the kingdom of God in it. You can find joy, peace, solidity, and freedom in it. There was a Zen teacher, a Vietnamese Zen teacher, who lived in the 12th century. He told his student monks that the purpose of monks is to touch the world of no birth and no death, namely Nirvana, namely the ultimate dimension of reality. And one of the monks asked, "Teacher, where can we find the world of no birth and no death?" And the answer came, right in the world of birth and death. There are two dimensions to reality. One called the historical dimension, and the other is called the ultimate dimension. You cannot touch the ultimate dimension if you throw away the historical dimension. You only need to be there, to be still, to practice looking deeply, touching deeply, and then the ultimate dimension will be available to you. The ultimate dimension sometimes is called nirvana, sometimes is called the world of no birth, no death. Sometimes it's called God. Let us contemplate a wave on the surface of the ocean. It seems to us that any wave would have a beginning and end. You might describe the wave as high or low, beautiful or less beautiful. But the wave is made of water. All notions of beginning and end, high and low, more beautiful and less beautiful, can only be applied to the wave. They could not be applied to water. The wave may stand for the historical dimension, and water may stand for the ultimate dimension. The wave can live the life of a wave, but she can also live the life of the water at the same time. If the wave can only live the life of a wave, it will be subjected to fear, to despair, to suffering. But the moment when the wave bends down and touches the water within her, she touches the ultimate dimension, she touches water, she knows that she is water, and then all fear, all sorrow will vanish. Nirvana, the kingdom of God, is there. It is the foundation of our being, the ground of our being. And it is possible for us to touch and to realize it. In order to go back to our true home and to get the peace, the solidity, and the freedom that we desperately need, we have to learn the art of being still and the art of looking deeply and listening deeply. In the teaching of the Buddha, we are offered practices that help us to touch the ultimate and to get the greatest kind of relief, touching nirvana. And the first practice is the awareness of impermanence. Everything changes. Nothing can remain the same forever. Impermanence is not only a notion, a theory, but impermanence should be used as a key to unlock the door of reality. It is a practice, a meditation, a samadhi, concentration. Impermanence is not a pessimistic note, because life is impermanence by itself. Without being impermanent, life is not possible. Suppose we have a grain of corn, and the grain of corn remains the same forever and ever. We have no hope to grow corn, to transform it into a plant of corn, and to have corn to eat. Thanks to impermanence, that life is possible, that your child can grow up, that your depression can go away. So impermanence is very crucial for life. We suffer not because things are impermanent. We suffer because things are impermanent, but we don't know that they are impermanent. We suffer because of our ignorance about the nature of impermanence. We know, it's easy for us to know that a flower is impermanent. It will stay there only for a number of days. And when a rose dies, we don't cry a lot. But there are other things, like the person we love. We forget that she is impermanent, like the flower. We forget that we ourselves are impermanent like the flowers. If we can nourish the insight of impermanence in us, and then we would do everything we can do today to make that person happy. We don't wait. Very often we regret, we cry, because when the beloved one was there, we did not do what we should have done in order to make him happy, to make her happy. So to preserve the insight of impermanence within yourself in your daily life, it's very helpful. Suppose you have some difficulty with your beloved one. He has said something that hurt you deeply. You suffer so much that you don't want to see him. You want to be alone. You might wish that he were not there, because he is the cause of your present suffering. The practice is to close your eyes and take a deep breath, and visualizing you and your beloved one 200 years from now. And when you open your eyes, the only thing you want to do is to take him or her in your arms and say, "Darling, I know you are there, and I'm very happy." So the samadhi, the concentration of impermanence, is very helpful. We should practice that. And if we practice looking deeply and realize the nature of impermanence, we will discover the nature of no self very soon. Non-self means nothing has a separate existence. Everything has to rely on everything else in order to be there. Like the flower. The flower has no self. The flower has no separate existence. A flower is made only of non-flower elements, like the sunshine, the rain, the cloud, the earth, minerals, gardener, and so on. If we return these non-flower elements to their source, the flower will not be there. So the flower is full of everything else of the cosmos, but it is empty of one thing, a separate existence, and that is non-self. When you use the key of impermanence, you can unlock the door of reality and you discover the nature of non-self. Nothing can be by itself alone. Everything has to interbe with everything else. To be can only mean to interbe. We inter are, that is the truth. This is true with everything. That is true with every person. This is true with every culture, every nation. America, for instance, is made of non-American elements. America has no self. And that is why America has to recognize the non-America elements as crucial to its own presence. The North cannot be without the South. North and South inter are. That is the kind of insight that all of us need, including politicians. With the key of non-self, we unlock reality and discover the nature of emptiness. Emptiness is also a very positive characteristic of life. Everything is empty. That is what we learn. But we may like to ask, empty of what? When we chant the Heart Sutra, we hear Avalokiteshvara telling us that everything is empty. We may like to ask, Mr. Avalokiteshvara, empty of what? And she will tell us, empty of a separate self. A cup may be empty of water, but when it is not It is not, when it is empty of water, it might be full of something else, like air. In order to be empty, the cup has to be there. And therefore, to be empty does not mean to be non-existent. And we know already that a cup or a flower, they are only empty of a separate self. At the same time, they are full of everything in the cosmos. You and I, we are also like that. And when we have realized the nature of impermanence, of non-self, of interbeing, of emptiness, we begin to touch the world of no birth, no death. In Buddhism, it's called nirvana. Nirvana means extinction. Again, we have to ask, extinction of what? Because words are very tricky. Extinction of what? Extinction, first of all, is extinction of notions. Notions like being, non-being. Notions like beginning, end. Notions like first cause or final cause. Notions like one or many. Nirvana is, first of all, the extinction of notions. Because all these notions cannot be applied to the ultimate reality. Suppose we are here, sitting together, and we are confident that this is the direction of the above, and this is the direction of the below. But our friends in China, they might be sitting like us, but for them, this is not their below, this is not their above, this is their below. We know that the idea of above and below cannot be applied to the cosmos. The notion of birth and death also cannot be applied to the ultimate reality. In our mind, we believe that to be born means from nothing, you suddenly become something. From no one, you suddenly become someone. And to die means from someone, you suddenly become no one. But if we practice looking deeply according to the teaching of impermanence and no self, we won't see anything like that. Nothing can be born from nothing. Like a sheet of paper. This sheet of paper was not born from nothing. In his former life, it was a tree. It was a cloud. It was the sunshine. You only need to look deeply into this sheet of paper to discover the presence of the cloud, the sunshine, the tree, the earth. Because you know that without sunshine, no trees can grow, no paper is possible. If there is no cloud, there's no rain and no vegetation can grow. So if we practice, continue to practice looking deeply, we will see that the nature of this sheet of paper is no birth. The sheet of paper has been there for a long time.